Welcome to the Student Pilot Podcast. My name is Simon Callis, a flight school owner. Each week, myself and my guests will be talking all things flight training and beyond to help inspire, motivate and support you on your journey to becoming a private or commercial pilot. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. This week we have John Sullivan with us, one of our former students. Today's podcast, we're talking about why it's important not to compare your journey to other people's. Everyone's got a story, haven't they, John?
They have.
That's the thing. And everyone's circumstance is different, so it's pointless comparing your story to somebody else's. We've seen many different student journeys as we've gone along. And the fastest one we ever saw, which we are fairly confident we could never replicate again, and it was all down to the circumstance, was Jake Kenny. I don't know whether you remember Jake, dear John. No.
Yeah, I do.
He was like 17 years old. He had all the money. He'd won a scholarship. He had no work or family commitments, flying 6 days a week. Luckily for him, he managed to have the same instructor for the majority of the course. He had no weather cancellations pretty much at all. I think he may have had one or two. And he did his exams alongside the training. And because all those things aligned, he managed to do his course in 4 weeks. In fact, it was just under 4 weeks. That's great, but you know, it's not replicable all the time, right? Mm. In fact, I think you'd struggle to do it again unless everything lines up. If you took any one of those kind of scenarios out, I think we'd end up in a situation where it's not possible. So, you know, let's look at those things. You know, if he hadn't have had the cash, he wouldn't have been able to do the course at all. If he hadn't have had the time, he wouldn't have been able to do the course. If he had other commitments like work or family, again, that would have meant that he couldn't train 6 days a week. You know, if he'd have had lots of weather cancellations like most people do, you know, our figure's about 40% on average for the year, then that wouldn't have worked out either. So there's a whole heap of things that have got to align to make that stuff happen. So I listen to a lot of students and quite often they're sort of saying, oh, you know, they went solo in 12 hours. I haven't been solo yet. I think the key thing is focus on your own journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, John, your journey was very different. And do you want to talk about your sort of circumstances as in...
Well, the history side, I started off at Sizedown, actually.
Yeah.
At gliding many, many years ago and never really committed to it, to the flying side. I probably did about 2 months worth of gliding. Mm-hmm. To be honest, it was too early in the morning. It was 5 a.m. Get it? But but it was okay. So it was good experience. And then did some flying when I was in the RAF. Not too much, just some private flying with buddy flying. Yeah. Again, didn't commit to it. And there's always been a reason not to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then winding way forward, 2016, when Amwell in the old building. So I had, I think, 4 hours at that point with, mm-hmm. with Steve. Again, dipping my toe, found every excuse under the sun. I can't do this. There's no. It's a bit like studying for a degree, which I did. You've got to do it. You say, right, I've got to do it, and commit that time. You've got to have that 100% commitment to do it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you'll never do it. And that's what I found. So I really sort of seriously started in March 2020 was the first time I started. Got into it, then COVID hit.
Yeah.
So there was no continuity. So during COVID, I studied. I did all the exams prior to actually flying. I made a point. I don't want to fly until I've finished all 9 exams. Yeah. So that's what I did. And then started up again 2022, doing 1 hour a week, which isn't enough. You can't get through the course of 1 hour a week. Maybe when you've finished and you want to do some casual flying, yes, but not for achieving this. It's that continuity you need. So you probably need 2 or 3 hours a week, I'd say, or build up to that at least anyway.
Yeah.
So December 2022, I was at that point at 2 to 3 hours a week. And sure enough, there was some improvement, without a doubt. So really, I didn't commit to it enough at the beginning. My work, I'm running two businesses. I'm traveling a lot. Although I'm attached or next door to the flying school, doesn't mean to say I can be there every day. You know, it was impossible. So it was quite difficult to get blocks of hours. And the problem with not flying regularly is that you will have a skills gap, 100%. It will start to fade after a couple of weeks. If you've flown once a week, you will forget by that time you come back. So you feel that you're recapping all the time. That was one of the things I found. Mm-hmm. So by upping the hours, at least you're not recapping. You're moving forward. Mm-hmm. Weather's a big factor. Once you pass or get through sort of the circuits and the landing and then start navigation, you're then at the mercy of the weather. So not just the weather, you've got your work, your weather, your family commitments, financial commitments. So there's lots of different, everything's got to line up to be able to achieve it.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare. Yeah. And we've seen the weather the last couple of years, I would say. Generally, it's getting worse.
It is worse.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
So you can't always guarantee, and I've talked to lots, in fact, I've talked to most students here now.
Yeah.
They get despondent about the weather and the amount of time they have to recap, but that's just life. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
So then come the skills test, I had to wait 14, well, it took 14 attempts because of bad weather. That was the word most frustrating because...
Sorry, when you say that was 14 bookings, not attempts at the
sorry,
test.
Sorry, 14 yeah, bookings. Yeah. Due to weather. So that was annoying because I was in at 5 a.m. every time I was take the skills test. And I'm quite meticulous with the plogging. I'd take about 3.5-4 hours to do it. Then to find the weather's no good. So doing that 13 times was quite frustrating. And students will feel that. They'll feel frustrated. In fact, yeah, I was talking to a guy today. He said, I'm really frustrated. I just cannot get my landings. I said, I couldn't either. That was one of the hardest bits I found was landings and diverts.
Yeah.
They were very, very tricky.
Landings, though, in my opinion, they just click after a while.
Yeah.
And you say that to people and they sort of say, yeah, but I've been doing it for weeks and weeks. It's different for everyone.
Yeah.
It's different for everybody. You just got to twist the process, I think.
I think so. There was one instructor I had here who he taught me a method and it works every time. It works every time. You know, hold that horizon. Don't let it drop. Don't let it drop. Keep holding it and away you go. So that was good. But what it can do is with all the delays is that psychologically you'll start to feel a bit despondent.
And
as well as the frustration, you'll feel your confidence will go. You get frustrated, so then your confidence is even worse. So if I had my time again, I would probably book a block of lessons, block a month, 3 or 4 months. But it's not practical.
So with your business and things, you just can't, can you?
No.
It's, but that's why we say it is, if you were comparing yourself to Jake, for example, you could get very frustrated very easily.
Yeah.
And even to the point where you think, I can't do it. But the reality is, his scenario was so perfect that it would never work for most people.
No. You're absolutely right. I was talking to someone the other day who's done 28 hours and is despondent because the person hasn't gone solo.
Yeah.
I said, it's not a race. Everybody's different. Take your time. There's no rush. What's the rush? Unless you're on a time constraint, if you're moving abroad or something, then it's a bit different. What I would say is don't panic. Just keep at it, but make sure you do the enough lessons, not just once a week.
Once a week is okay if you've got less commitments. Because you can retain stuff because you've got time to think about it.
I suppose.
But I think your circumstance, because you're so busy, you've allowed so much time to do it. But if you hadn't got anything else to think about during that time, maybe you could revise a bit at home. So I think it is partly circumstance, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Now, obviously, you're considerably older than Jake was.
Okay. Rude.
Only just.
A couple of years.
A couple of decades.
Actually, four.
Yeah.
It really is so, 4 decades.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So,
right. I'm leaving now. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Do you think that made a difference? Because we've heard this a few times, that some people are saying age makes no difference. I, from my experience, feel like I've slowed down as I get older. Do you agree with that or not? It's subjective, isn't it?
I don't know. My job is the scientific, so I'm using maths, etc. all the time. That's why I found the exams not that difficult, really, because of the physics side. I deal with that every day. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine, you get tired quicker. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Doing the navs, I think down to Kemble. Yeah, I was quite tired doing the nav solo down to Kemble and back, and did a 2-hour flight a couple of weeks ago and felt tired. So I think physically you certainly are different.
Yeah.
Mentally, because you're tired, mentally you will feel different. So you do it young, that's the thing. Don't put it off.
I think the family commitments is a big thing as well, because I know that because I've got young twins, I go home and they just want your attention. So if you go home and you've got stuff to do and kids to look after, you need to allocate some time where you can just lock yourself away and study, don't you?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
So I definitely think a lot of it is around the circumstance that you're in. You know, if you've got more time available, less commitments, you're going to do better. I think.
Absolutely agree. I travel a lot and I stay in Premier Inns a lot and eat in a restaurant always on your own because you're away. That's the time when I study. You have to fit it in. So over dinner, I'd take my books down every day and study. The first one was interesting, the radio. I was talking to someone today about it, that practicing procedures, radio procedures, do it in the car. Travel from work, home to work, just practice your radio procedures. And you have to keep those in check. What did I find most enjoyable was I found the navigation most enjoyable, actually, which was great. The diverts were tricky at first, but you soon nail that. But the actual navigating and being able to get somewhere within a couple of degrees off track and actually on time, it's really fulfilling. You know, it's very, very good.
What did you find difficult about the diverts? I know for me it was the being relaxed enough to spend a bit of time looking at your lap and doing stuff whilst like allowing the aeroplane to move around a bit. Do you know what I mean?
It's exactly that. It's keeping the eye on the aeroplane and what it's doing, especially in an orbit. Going straight, not too bad, but one of the instructors advised me to just take your hands off the wheel for a second, kind of thing. And it did work because the problem is when you're writing down and you've got the yoke in your hand, you may be pitching down or you're changing that. So that worked. And that's one thing. I had a lot of instructors, which is good and bad. I think having the same instructor is probably not realistic, maybe two or three. I had a lot more than that. But in a way, I liked it because I've gained a lot of experience from having a lot of instructors. But it's not ideal if you want to get through quick. I would recommend try and keep the instructor number
minimum,
down to
I one. Think, again, I think a lot of that is down to circumstance as well, isn't it? Because I know with you, there was a lot of times where, because you were next door, it was like, oh, the weather's good, I've got a bit of time. If you've got an instructor, that sort of thing. So you can quite easily rack up a load of instructors if you do it sort of ad hoc basis. So I think some of that is like, if you're able to plan in advance so that you know who you're flying with and you can try and limit that by, what I usually say to people is try and fly on set days because set instructors work on those set days. So that will reduce your number of instructors down, but you're inevitably going to get more instructors if you're very sporadic about bookings, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I remember you said to me once, when I first started, actually, you said, you've got to book 90 lessons. I was thinking, what? What are you talking about? 90 lessons? But it's actually true. You have to book way in advance because of the weather. You can't.
Absolutely.
You can't avoid that. So that's quite interesting.
So you said navigation was your favourite. What did you find least enjoyable?
Least enjoyable? At first, the diverts. Didn't really enjoy doing that, but then you have to be able to do that in case you're in trouble. But once you get over that and you're able to do that, it's just a process. And flying is about a process, I think. Everything you do in it is all about process, keeping that process. So I didn't find that enjoyable at first. Landings I didn't find enjoyable at all at first. I'd struggle with landings, I've got to be honest, for a long time. But it did click in the end, which was...
I remember doing loads of training on 152, then quitting for several years, coming back, realising obviously I need to go solo again. But I bought the sharing bombs then. I couldn't land bombs at all.
Oh, really?
It was just really difficult. And I was thinking, oh God, is it... But it was probably, to be honest, I would have probably been that bad in a 152 after several years.
But
changing aeroplanes as well didn't help, so...
The bombs just doesn't want to land full stop.
Well, does it? It wants to fly. It's designed to fly, isn't it?
Yeah, 172s. I was with one of the instructors, and it was a real strong headwind. I think it was 15 or 20 knots, and just couldn't land it. And the instructor said, "This doesn't want to land, does it?" And we just glide down the runway. It's just
you'll probably find it one day when you get a really hot day as well, and it won't settle on the runway. It's just like. You just got to get rid of as much energy as you can.
It's interesting.
So most challenging
were the landings, I would say. Landing I'm just speaking to a student today. He's finding it very frustrating. He's very despondent to the point that you will think, I'm going to quit. I hear that. Absolutely. I've heard that from a lot of students. I'm going to quit. I just cannot land. And I talked to him today. Said you've got to carry on. You've just got to do it.
That's what I do tell them that when they start. Because I do the consultations now. It's one of those things, until you start feeling it yourself, you like you said about the 90 bookings, you were thinking, oh God, he's talking rubbish, you know?
Yeah.
But it's true. So that's why we do this podcast, really, is to try and get information out there to people, to try and make it a bit warts and all. This is what it's like, you know? And I think this is why this episode's so important, is that, you know, some people will inevitably do a lot better than you do because of their circumstance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's your journey. And you can't replicate their journey, so you've just got to focus on your own.
Mm.
You
know? I do hear that a lot, people comparing. They do compare and they say...
It's inevitable, isn't it?
It's no point.
Human nature.
It is. But you can't do that with flying.
No, you can't.
Everybody has a different pace. Everybody has a different pace.
So let's have a look. If you did it again differently, you said that you would try and block some time out.
I would certainly do a block of 3 months if I could, but it wasn't practical.
Yeah.
And when we do that block, you probably do it in the summer, but that's not realistic either.
Yeah.
I think it's taken me 2 years, but I'm glad it has in a way, because I've experienced all weathers. Flying in the summer and then having to experience bad weather when you're flying, it's not realistic. But so I enjoyed that. I've enjoyed all the crosswind landings, and you've got to learn how to crosswind land.
Yeah, 100%. I find that if you only fly in really good weather, right, that's all you're ever going to fly in. And I've been really guilty of that. If you start flying in weather that's a bit more challenging, that's still safe within your limitations. You know, a typical example of this is like people go flying around and they say, oh, yeah, because it says all the nines, you know, so they think, it's 10K viz. It's 10K or more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's probably in reality 25K, something like you know. Yeah. So when they get into 10K, they're like, this is really bad, you know, and it's not, it's just 10K.
Yeah.
And then when you get down to 5K, then it's like, I'm flying in a fishbowl, you know, so it's very easy to think the weather's worse than what it actually is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. So, on my exam, it was nice in January. It was a very clear day, clear, cold day, and the visibility was, like you said, 25-30k. You could see for miles and miles. It was really, really nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you've got to fly in the bad weathers as well. You've got to do it.
Yeah. So what are your future plans now you're licensed?
I did a LAPL. Thought the LAPL would be quicker. Actually, it wasn't.
No.
Because of all the navigations. The problem with navigation is you have to rely on the weather. It's got to be good wherever you go. So in the end, it was taking, I think Kemble was 10 weeks and Oxford was 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Then you've got to keep current. So all this adds time to your course, but I was still on the LAPL. So I'd upgrade to the PPL and I'd like to get IR rating. So flying above clown would be nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'd say clown. I meant cloud. Flying above clown.
So let's recap then on why we think it's important that we don't compare your journey to others. So, I mean, first one is we've got all students learn differently. All students struggle with different aspects of training. So one thing I've noticed is some of the really academic people struggle a lot with the practical stuff, but they absolutely ace the exams, and vice versa. Some of the really practical people struggle a lot if they're not academic. So that's just two sort of examples, but then there's anything in between, isn't there? Like you said, you're brilliant at maths, you know, so the all the flight planning and stuff probably fairly straightforward to you.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, whereas some people, flight planning is like the end of the world. They're like, oh God, I can't do it. You know, it's what you've got to do it. So I think there's different aspects. Like we said earlier, progress is mainly down to circumstance. If you're flying less frequently, you'll inevitably take more hours. If you're low on confidence, you'll inevitably need more hours. If you're struggling to finance the training, you'll inevitably fly less often and then take longer, which is going to lead to more hours and more cost. And one thing we talked about earlier was don't be embarrassed either. You know, don't be embarrassed about what goes wrong. And don't do it in silence, you know, speak to other people. So, you know, speak to other people like you. So other members of the school, speak to them, get their advice, because you may have put that guy's mind at ease earlier saying, look, the landings, it was the same for me, you know. And likewise, when you get further on in the course, the people who are behind you, you can sort of drag them up with you as well.
So yeah, totally agree.
I think it's really good to help each other out. You know, it's sort of holding each other accountable a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, John, thank you very much for coming on the podcast and sharing your experiences with us. Please do like and subscribe. It really does help us grow the channel and get more content out there to people. And we'd like to see you on the next one. Thank you very much.
Thanks, and I hope it checks in the post.
Check. I'm not going to pay you for this. If you like this episode, please like, subscribe, and ding the bell to receive notifications of the next episode.